walk through and around stuff. Okay. I wanted to be able to walk around and through stuff and kind of carry myself in a straight line, if you will, or just kind of walk into a room and just direct myself to a location and go there instead of getting caught up in the mix. And so having the dog help me do that. I also would get a little bit anxious getting turned around. But over the years, as I've gotten more and more into traveling around with my friends or seeking out places to go, having just somebody with me, even if it's my guide, really helps kind of bring down the anxiety. And especially if I'm having to walk in an environment where something might be going on or it might be unsafe. You know, not everybody knows that these dogs are not trained to be aggressive. So it's nice having a constant companion. So, but then when I don't have him, I just talk to my cane like he's my companion. Okay, cane, let's go. So.
Well, those are all excellent points, Christy. And I really appreciate that, especially the one that you mentioned about having a dog and people not necessarily knowing that these dogs are, not trained to attack, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we know that they're not going to do anything like that, but especially if you're waiting at a bus stop or something, I think that's important that mm-hmm. people not know too much about the dog. And
I apologize for that interruption, by the way. I just realized that I forgot to start recording at the beginning of the meeting.
Oh, that's okay. That's all right. No problem. Who is this as our host? I'm sorry. I didn't catch your name.
Mike Gorse.
Oh, Mike. Hi. 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 Okay, great. Great. No, yeah, no worries. Toasting. Sure. No, we're glad to have you. And thank you for recording our session. And now I'd like to go ahead and ask Jim the same question. I think you mentioned it some in your first answering the first question I gave you, but talk to us a little bit about what led you to get a guide dog, because that kind of goes into the behavior, you know, issue in terms of having to accept our dogs as they are, et cetera.
Well, I first have to lead off in saying I think Christy mentioned that it was, or I think it was Christy, that it was her second guide dog. It took her to get to the second guide dog to really understand and appreciate how they work. And that's true with me too. Even though I had Acura, 8.5 years, going to a second dog like Madeira, who's quite different in personality, if you will, I really appreciate the work that she does. She's patient. Now, you know, she does focus, that's true, but she's a smart dog because from time to time when I get the harness out and the leash out, then she wants to play. You know, it's like she's saying, well, it's playtime. I want to play before I work. And I play with it, you know, and it's funny that she does that. It's kind of like reverse psychology. But we play for 2 or 3 minutes and I put, you know, the harness on her and she's just fine. She's the most patient dog that I've ever seen. She'll stand beside me when we're in groups, within groups of people, and not go anywhere. She's a very sweet dog, very friendly. I just have so much respect for that. And her ability to guide is great. The thing that I want to go back to when I first got a dog, and I mentioned it before, I was a cane user for quite a number of years, a few decades, if you will. But I came to a point where it was different. I'd always been a dog lover all my life. And there were points in time I'd go to conventions and I'd want to love on other people's guide dogs. And a few of them said, but Jim, you ought to get your own dog. So that was first thing that prompted me to do it. But then, you know, using a cane, I'm right-handed. So it really got hard, holding my right arm into me and swinging the cane out in front of me, you know, because I have a chronic condition, came to a point I said, I got to do this differently. And so I said, there's so many people using guide dogs that are doing it so well. Why shouldn't I try it out? And what I went through, and I have to say this because I'm sure some of you who don't have dogs were thinking about it. The thing that went through my mind is, do I really want to take care of her or him, the dog? Do I want to water it, keep water in their bowl, feed it? If it gets sick, do I want to boil them chicken and give them white rice? Take them to the doctor in the middle of the night? It's like having a child in a very real way. It is. Your dog is like
one.
Because
like a toddler.
Like a toddler. Emotionally, they're two years old. That's why they're goofy. That's why they want to play. And I really asked those questions. Do I really want to do that? And I went through the most awful time trying to convince myself it's okay to do it. And you know what? Now that I have my second dog, I wouldn't have it any differently. We are interdependent on each other. And she's my companion too, my best friend. And it's just the most wonderful thing I've ever done.
Well, that's great. Holly, would you like to talk a bit about what led you to?
I have been, unlike Jim, I've been a dog lover my entire life. And probably like a lot of you, I do have some vision. And I was under the mistaken notion that you had to be totally blind in order to get a dog. Well, you note. Yay! Because those of us with a little bit of vision are the majority. So yay for that. I set foot on the Guide Dogs for the Blind campus for the first time when I was 14 and took a tour and walked off that campus and said, I'm doing this. I really don't care what anybody says. And as a kid, of course, you know, you live with your parents, and my mother was terrified of big dogs. And I said, well, you're just going to have to get over that because I'm going to do this. My parents have adopted my last two dogs after they retired, and my mother will never not have a dog in her house now. She's spoiled. But one of the reasons that I got a dog are, one, I am on the petite side, and as a woman on the petite side, yeah, we know these dogs are going to lick somebody to death, and that's as serious as they get. But the general public doesn't know that. And so it does kind of make you feel a little safer. And also, I have been able to do things such as I went all the way through college, jobs, international travel, all kinds of things with a dog. And yeah, you can do it with a cane, but it's a whole lot more clunky when you do it that way. And with a dog, take National Convention, for example, you're walking through that hotel and there's 3,000 other blind people, the majority of whom are using canes. You're moving at twice the speed that they are. So you're not going to get tangled up in the mess. And that is a really, really nice thing. Plus, they're a huge interaction tool. People don't think canes are nice and furry and friendly. Dogs are.
Okay, very good. I really appreciate it. My final question for our panelists is, what are some of the behaviors that you find to be annoying when your dog exhibits them, and how do you basically work with that to make sure that those behaviors don't interfere with your dog's work? So I will go ahead and start with Christy.
All right, thank you, Liz. So I would have to say that one of the behaviors that Harvey exhibits is that he's very personable. Harvey is 9 years old, and so I know in a couple of years, he still loves to work and has slowed down some, but he still loves to work. And I know that in a couple of years, I'm going to need to retire him, but I could honestly see him continuing to work as a therapy dog, because he has still been a therapy dog to so many people, even as a guide. And when I say that, I've like taken the harness off to let people pet him. And I have noticed like people calming down when they were petting him. But sometimes when I have been working with him, he has had a tendency to get a little too personable with people. But luckily, what I've done is just, Harvey is a very, he responds really quickly to voice commands and my tone of voice. And so most of the time, I don't even have to correct him. He's easily redirected with my voice. And if I have had to correct him, it's been a very light correction. And sometimes, you know, now that we've been a team since 2013, I can almost tell, like, if I've corrected him, because, you know, he's not following instructions, and I'm like, all right, I'm correcting you, you know. He's like, I can almost tell, he's like, why did you have to do that? I was listening. I'm a good boy. And I'm just like, well, all right, sit. So you learn to read your dog, and they learn to read you.
They do get their feelings hurt.
Yes, they do.
Yes, big time.
Yes. And Jim?
Well, both of my dogs have been Labradors. Madeira is a Labrador all the way, so she is very friendly. And that can be a drawback at times. She has a number of friends here at Larkspur where we live, and that's the only way I would want her is to have friends. But you got to be, here's the thing, you got to be a little bit careful, because there are some people out there I've noticed that they get eye contact with your dog and you don't know it. And that is what's going on. So they got eye contact, and they could really especially if you're in a crowd and you're having a meal to eat and there's food all around. If someone else likes your dog, my dog can be kind of sneaky. She'll maintain contact with somebody to beg them to give her something to eat. And, you know, she's a Labrador. They love food. And so I have to watch that very carefully. I say, no, Madeira, stop watching Carol. She's not going to feed you. And get her to lay down. She does, you know, it's not a big distraction, but it's there and it does happen. So I have to be a little bit careful with her around food. She's a sniffer too. So there's lots of grass out here. There's a big park out and back with twin creeks, and we walk that each and every day. So every now and then, you know, there's something that smells good in that grass that Madeira wants to go to. And, you know, she's a really strong dog. Both my dogs have been very strong. So she'll pull me to the left and I think, oh, she wants to go to the bathroom. Oh, she wants to sniff the grass. Because there's something in that grass that she wants that she should not have. And so I figured that out early on. Yeah, no, she's trying to sniff her tail off, and I have to use the leash to correct her gently but firmly, get her back on the sidewalk, and away we go. So, yeah, these are drawbacks, but they're handleable. And overall, she's just a fantastic dog. She is a companion, and as I said before, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, that's great. Holly?
Okay. Jim, correct me if I'm wrong. Your dog is from GDB also, correct?
GDB, yeah. Guide Dogs from the Blind. Both of them are from there.
Yeah, in fact, I'm here to interrupt
all three of us are GDB grads.
mentioned that.
Yeah, I lived in California when I got both my dogs. I was a refugee coming here to Texas, so I'm here to stay.
If you don't,
the reason I bring that up is Judy uses all positive reinforcement, which is really, really nice. So we don't generally, if you do have to do a correction, it's a real quick pop and release. And that's really kind of nice. My girl does not really exhibit any negative behaviors when she's working. When she's working, it is all serious. And if you pet her without clearing it with me, if looks could kill. You didn't talk to my mom. I'm not going to talk to you, which I love. Her one thing that she does is when she is in my backyard sniffing and I call her, she takes her sweet time. She will come, but she takes her sweet time. And I have learned, instead of saying come, I'll say, let's go. And when I say let's go, she comes at me at a dead run. So you have to learn what your dog's keywords are. And she has really taught me that.
That's great. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. One thing that we forgot to mention is that all three of our panelists are guide dogs for the blind graduates. Yep. So when we have a number of schools I know represented on our in our meeting today, but it was just kind of a fun coincidence that all three of these folks are GDB participants. Let's see. Can someone give me a time check, please?
Real quick. It is 1:57.
Okay. We've got, Mike Gores. Can you tell me, is Mike Goring, he's our next speaker. Is he on our call?
I didn't see him come in unless he's on the phone. I'll double check the list.
Okay.
If I see him.
And what about Stacy and now I know that they have they have other meetings too that they're trying to oversee and host. I don't think that they're here either.
Yeah, Raul told me that he thought he would probably be here in the later part of the meeting, but he might not
right.
be here earlier.
Right. So what
I imagine
I would
he'll
like
be
to,
by.
Sure. What I would like to do since Mike is scheduled and just so that y'all know, and we'll introduce Mike in more detail, but he is in charge of field training at Guiding Eyes, and he's a friend of TxAgDo. He has spoken on several different occasions. He did a really good presentation a while back on how we can, you know, work with our dogs in the when we were at the height of the pandemic and things like that. And I thought it was very helpful. And so he is going to talk to us about, from a training point of view, what are some of the behaviors that are looked for and how do they work with dogs, you know, to exhibit good behavior and so forth. But in the meantime, before we hear from Mike, are there any folks that want to ask questions of our panelists, since they are all experienced guide dog handlers? And I guess the thing to do is to raise your hand if you do have questions, and then Mike can unmute you. Do we have questions? Yeah, if not, that's fine. I just wanted to, since we had a little bit of time, I wanted to, just open the floor up a little bit for questions. I wanted to thank everybody for, for your participation on the panel. And for those who want to find out, like I said, more about who we are. We're certainly here to help give information and so forth. If you guys don't mind, I am going to be right back because I need to quickly find out what's going on with our speaker. So I don't mean to leave you guys in a lurch, but if you don't mind hanging tight for a minute, I am going to excuse myself for a moment and see what I can find out.
You're good.
I'll be right back.
Thank you.
So, Holly, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm curious. So I know you're a GDB grad. Like, I mean, did you travel to GDB to get each one of your dogs?
I did. I was there for a month with my first dog and then for 2 weeks with Harvey.
I was there for a month with my first dog, 3 weeks with my second, 3 weeks with my third, 2 weeks with my fourth, and 2 weeks with my fifth, and was really actually glad to come home with my fifth. We came home on March 14th of last year, so I literally was standing in the Portland airport going, please don't cancel my flight. I really don't want to get stuck here. Although if you're going to get stuck at guide dogs, it's not a bad place to be.
No.
No, because you're close to San Francisco. I mean,
well, I was in. She was in Oregon.
Oh, you went to Oregon. Oh, I see.
Yeah, but you're in a little town, so how cool would that be to walk around? Of course, everything was locked down, not so much.
I was in Oregon for my last two, and probably will never go back to California again. Oregon's just quieter and more like Texas.
Well, my first dog,
California.
Yeah, I have left there, and I wouldn't go back. My second dog, I was scheduled to go to campus in October of 2017. And right at of course, they have horrific fires out there. So they had a terrible fire in the North Bay, and it affected the air quality around their campus. They canceled our class. They canceled
it. Campus down.
Yeah, they closed it down entirely. And so they gave us folks who were scheduled to go. They said, you can either come in late November or late December to another class, or we'll do in-home training. Well, I didn't want to go during the holidays, so I had in-home training with Madeira. And that was great because we got to train right in my area where we live.
Jim, have both of your dogs been girls?
What's that?
Have both of your dogs been girls?
Mine? No, my first dog was a male. He was Acura.
You got to admit, the name Acura is...
Acura.
That is awesome.
Yes. Well, he was quite a boy. I have on my... I adopted him out at the end. And right. He had to pass. His adopter had... I don't know how she did it, but they took pictures of one of his feet and his toes, and they engraved it into this rock. And it's sitting, it's really cool, because now I can still have him here, in a sense, and feel his foot and toes, and it's so great.
Awesome. I have Polly Ann's cremated remains. And I wasn't sure, how the book and the box is like cherry wood, and it's got her name on a silver nameplate. It's just beautiful.
Hi everyone, I'm back. We should be expecting Michael momentarily, and then we also are going to have Raul and Stacy join us, and that may be one of them right now. We'll wait for a second to see. Also wanted to recognize that we have our national rep with us, Kevin Worley. Kevin. Would you like to stop in and say anything, Kevin? He may be muted.
Probably muted.
But anyway, we're glad to have our national rep on the call with us.
Yes.
And so, this is Raul here. I just also came back from a different session. I'm kind of all over the place here as well.
I understand. Totally. Yes.
I figure that while Kevin is going to unmute, I would like to say a few words about Kevin. And maybe that will entice him to unmute real quick.
To get ready to what? Defend his.
Yes. No, Kevin, I've known Kevin since the 90s when I joined the NFB, and Kevin was as crazy and wild then as he is now. So that has not changed, and that is definitely a compliment. So I'm really happy that he is our national rep.
Right. So Kevin and I kind of all grew up in the NFB.
Look at that. It worked.
Yeah.
Yes, there he is, speaking of.
Guys, actually what happened is I ran downstairs to grab my grocery order because I'm getting sicker and sicker and I needed some DayQuil and whatever and whatever. So I heard you talking about me as I was running back in. Every time I do that when I'm at a state convention, I'm like, don't call him. Don't call on me. Don't call on me. So that's great to be
here. And they call on you.
Yeah.
And what did I do? I called on you, Kevin. So yeah,
thank you so much. I love the guide dog stories. You know, we had our Colorado Association of Guide Dog Users meeting a week before our actual in-person state convention to kind of stretch it out a little bit. And we had a thing called, what did we call it? Tales of Tales, Adventures of Guide Dog Users.
And I folks like
got
that.
That was a Marianne Magliarelli idea. And people really they enjoy hearing the tales of guide dogs. So it's great to be here. And I have had my guide dog now 5 years. I can't believe that. And I waited till I was 60 to get a guide dog, unlike some on this call who got them when they were 16, I guess. So
19.
Anyway, Madam Chairman, I think this is Raul's time. If you want me to share more, I'm happy to. Otherwise, I'm happy to mute so Raul can say more complimentary things about me.
Well, oh Kevin, we're just happy to have you on our call. This is fantastic.
Thank you.
Kevin, I'm gonna tell your dog what you said about having a dog named Snoopy though.
Because my dog gets, I don't know about you guys, do you guys stick with your dog's names? My dog gets called all kinds of
everything
things.
Everything in the book.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter. Ding dong, sluggo, whack job, knucklehead. He doesn't care. She'll say, you know.
My dog is dong. Madeira. My dog is Madeira. Someone called her Moderna one time. So.
Oh, my gosh. Moderna?
Yeah.
Well, mine is Barbara, and I sometimes call her Barbara Ann. Then Christy and I come up with the Barbie World song. So
there you
will sometimes play that for her, and just to be silly, you know, I'll get that on my Apple Music. You know, I'm a Barbie girl in my Barbie world.
Barbie likes to flirt with Harvey.
Yes, she does.
Big time.
My dog's name is Britta, so she gets, you know, water pitchers. And actually, one of our puppy raisers texted me one day, and she said, I'm at Sam's, and I'm by the Brita water filters. So I had to know how your dog is. Is she okay?
Well, I like to make up names for my dog that people, you know, kind of think, like when I get up from a table in a bar or a restaurant, I like to say, all right, come on, slime face or whatever. And so people will go, oh my God, you call her that? I'm like, oh yeah, it's fine. Come on, you know, knucklehead or whatever. Because again, she doesn't care what I call her, just as long as I keep calling her.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I call my dog Baby Girl and she likes that.
Yeah.
My first dog's name was Avis. And I was actually opening my first bank account in Colorado. It was 18 or 19 rather. And so I had her and she was just being just a butthead. So Doofus, would you stop? And this bank teller literally said, how long have you had Doofus? She thought my dog's name was Doofus.
Yeah. Well, mine acts like a doofus.
Oh my gosh.
They can't look like doofuses.
You all were talking earlier about dogs, you know, their behaviors that kind of give you a little bit of a, yeah, like, how do you deal with it? My dog really only has one, and that is she alarm barks, and I don't care so much in the house. You know, it doesn't matter to me. She's a dog out of harness. But the thing that she'll do sometimes, let's say we're in a waiting room waiting for a nurse, okay? Or we're at an, and I mean, for whatever reason, she gets startled when they come out, Kevin or Mr. Worley, and she will jump up and bark. Mm-hmm. She's not, but they don't know that she's just saying hello. She's a German Shepherd, and frankly, I'm worried about, I'm going to fly next week. Well, I may not be flying now if I end up testing positive, but supposed to fly next week, and you know, the attestation form says, you know, that you can they can refuse you if, and one of the things it says on there is barking behavior. And I thought, oh great, the flight attendant's going to come up and say, yeah, Mr. Worley, and Onyx is going to jump up and do what she does. But again, all I have to do is say, hey, knock it off, settle down, and she does. But the sight of you, and it's a German Shepherd, so
right. Well, and also, it is probably far better. Our dogs are going to probably be far better behaved than so many of these passengers who are literally attacking the flight attendants. And people need to people need to realize that, you know, hey, our dogs are better controlled than the passengers.
Get a bumper anyway, sticker. Did my guide dog's better behaved than your kid?
Have we gotten Mike Goring on the call yet?
I don't see him, but I've gone ahead and sent him a text with the Zoom ID just to make sure in case I got lost in his email, because I know he's been communicating with Stacy on you know, that. So one thing I'd like to say while we're waiting, if this is okay, is to just encourage folks, if you have not already entered into the 50-50 drawing or a raffle drawing that Tech Sagdu is doing, now's a good chance to consider doing that. 50-50 basically means that when we draw a name, you get to keep half of what we have collected for the drawing, and then the other half goes to Tech Sagdu's treasury so that we can continue doing some nice stuff with it. And I've certainly got Liz and I and Stacy and Christy and Jim have some nice ideas of what to do going forward with the future on that. So something to consider. To do that, we can take Zelle, Cash App, or PayPal payments, and they're all conveniently done by using the email address texagdu@gmail.com, and that's texagdu@gmail.com.
And I also want to jump in here and thank Raul and Stacy for all of their hard work in not only getting the platform up for us to have our 50-50 and our dues payments being done electronically, because it makes it just 1,000 times easier than dealing with, you know, the old fashioned snail mail, et cetera. But also for putting together our two baskets that we entered into the big basket bonanza. And I think that yours truly has the highest bid so far on the bag of Wags basket. I believe I do.
Oh, wow.
I'll have to go back and check. Uh-oh. But I'm in a friendly competition with a couple of folks on here for the dinner and movie basket. So we'll see how it all plays out. But anyway, if y'all haven't put your bids in, I would, you know, suggest if you want to do that, that would be a great way of helping the affiliate.
So what's the Wags? I'm sorry, Elizabeth, you say there's a guide dog related basket?
Yes, there is.
There is.
What is in that puppy, if you will?
Stacy, do you want to go ahead and talk about it since you put it together, or is she off elsewhere?
She's still talking about calendars. So what I can say is go ahead.
Well, I don't know if I'll remember everything, but it has lavender scented poop bags, which I think are great great to have.
Oh, and they smell better before they're used.
Oh, there's my guess. And then it has,
for sure.
It has a toy, and I think it has some fog wipes, and I think a Chewy gift card. Yes, a Chewy gift card.
Correct. Correct.
I might be leaving out some stuff, but those are the things I remember. So
I'm all over this. I'm all over this, Liz. You better get it up there.
I we'll see who comes out ahead, Kevin. So anyway, but yeah, so please, if you haven't done so already, go into the 32 auction site, and there's information about how to join that on the NFB of Texas website, and put your bids in. So,
and Mike Goring is here, just so you know.
Great, wonderful. Mike, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us. We really do appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure, always.
I was telling folks earlier that you are, a definite friend of TexAgDo. You have certainly done some excellent presentations. And I was going to ask Stacy to introduce you, but I think that she is busy with some other things at the moment. So I will go ahead and turn the meeting over to you. Mike, I'm not sure if I'm going to get your title correct, but you are, is it the Director of Field Services at Guiding Eyes?
I'm a regional guide dog mobility instructor.
Okay, I'm thank not, you. Yeah, okay.
Not, yeah. So, well, but, yeah. Should I take it from here or?
Sure. Go right ahead. As you know, our topic is the guide dog behavior.
Yeah. So, just a brief. I'll keep the introduction short. I'm Mike Goring with Guiding Eyes for the Blind. I'm a regional guide dog mobility instructor with Guiding Eyes, and I have been with Guiding Eyes for coming on 14 years now. Prior to that, I worked in the service dog sector. I was a executive director of a small service dog program up in North Dakota, known as Service Dogs for America. And I worked with that program for 18 years prior to jumping on with Guiding Eyes. So I've done a little bit of all of it. Stacy had asked me about the group wanted a little bit about behavior, temperament, and I believe how that kind of weaves into the matching process. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
Okay. So.
Yes, that's correct, Mike. Yes.
So, yeah, if I end up going, I mean, I can talk on this stuff all day long, as some of you may already know. Getting me to talk is never a problem. Getting me to shut up is a different issue. You want to first understand what temperament versus behavior. So when we're talking about temperament, we're basically, in a layman's way of looking at it, is personality of the dog. When we're talking about temperament, we're basically, you can broadly categorize it into three broad categories. A dog that is assertive/aggressive, a dog that is neutral, or a dog that is passive. And you can break down, within those categories even further to have some subcategories within that. So generally speaking, when we're talking about temperament, as I said, we're kind of talking about the personality of the dog. Behavior, when we're talking behavior, that's something that a dog does, a thing that it does. So sniffing is a behavior. Growling at another dog or barking at other dogs is a behavior. Now, what behaviors a dog might be prone to can have something to do with their temperament. And this is when we're problem solving in the field, for instance, And even as we're evaluating dogs for matching purposes, you can see you can have a behavior in a dog, a simple behavior and barking at another dog. When we're trying to figure out the causative factor for that, we will factor in that the temperament of the dog. So a dog in any of those three categories, a dog that is assertive, a dog that is neutral, or a dog that is passive, any three of those, you know, categories of dog may bark at another dog. Their reason for doing so is maybe different though. So it's their motive and the reason that they're barking, the reason that they're doing that behavior can be different. So therefore, when we're trying to troubleshoot specifically, we want to find out, well, what led up to that? And then we also want to factor in, well, what's the general temperament of this dog? Because that's going to determine in part how we try to problem solve that behavior. So does that make sense to everybody? Does anybody have any questions, temperament versus behavior? Because that's important as we go on this dialogue. That's kind of important to be able to understand. So everybody's clear with that? Then, so for instance, if I have a dog that I would categorize in that he's a more assertive dog, and I have that dog is barking at other dogs, I'm going to look at his body posture. And in an assertive dog, I'm going to expect that when I see this behavior, I'm going to have a tail that the dog's body posture, I'll have a tail that's up, ears that are held up and forward, the dog standing on his toes, leaning forward. That goes along with an assertive body posture and would fit a dog with an assertive. So that dog is likely to, his motive would be most likely to be territorial, perhaps, protective, perhaps. But it's coming from that kind of motive, and that matches with the body posture. He's putting his ears up. Everything's out and forward. He's like, hey, everybody else, back off. I got this. This is my space. This is my person. So that's going to come from a dog that's more assertive. You might have a dog at the other end of the spectrum that's a more passive dog, and may bark also. His motive is going to be different, and I would expect it's going to look a little different. That dog may actually be leaning backwards. I would say he's already got it shifted into reverse. He's leaning backwards a little bit. The tail's down, maybe even tucked. The ears are drawn back. He's a little more wide-eyed. And in that situation, that dog is feeling threatened. And his motive for that is coming from a fear. That's coming from a fear place, a concern. So it's coming from a different place. And how I'm going to be able to address that with the dog, what types of, whether I'm going to use counter conditioning, whether I'm going to use redirection techniques, whether I'm going to use collar corrections, all that stuff is, what my recipe for getting through that behavior, both in the short term and a long-term strategy, is going to be different based on the temperament type of dog I have. If I have a dog that's already fearful, for instance, so I have a dog that's barking out of fear. His motive is fear. So he's already afraid, and he sees this other dog and he's barking. He said, don't you dare come any closer because I'm already nervous and I don't need you any closer. And that, so he's barking as a warning, but it's coming from a different motive. So if I come in with that dog and I give a heavy collar correction, for instance, now I've just reaffirmed this dog's belief. He's already fearful. He's already perceiving that this other dog is a threat to us. And so when we hit that dog with a heavy collar correction, we can actually exacerbate the problem, because so now he's standing there, he's grumbling at this other dog, I'm afraid. And then we pop him with a slip collar, for instance. And now his reaction to that is, I knew it. I saw that other dog as a threat. And sure enough, pain resulted from that other dog's presence. Even though it didn't come from that other dog, it's still, he perceived the situation he was in as potentially dangerous to him, potentially harmful to him. And sure enough, we affirmed that. So now the next time he sees that other dog, he's not realizing. And then that's why the timing, when we talk about timing of corrections, it gets so important, and when you're using them and with which dog you're using them. Because in that situation, if you have with poor timing on a dog that's already a passive dog and he's growling out of that. So now the next time you run into another dog, he's going to growl that much more quickly, most likely, because the last time he was in that situation, he's like, I don't know why, but that led to me getting feeling physical pain. He's not realizing that it's his growling behavior that's actually causing it. So that's in part why through the years, there's been a shift away from using physical corrections in some instances, because they're not always, it's not one size fits all. Now you take the dog on the other end of the spectrum, a dog that is more assertive, that dog in that situation, I would still personally, as an instructor, I would still try to use some redirection techniques and some counter conditioning techniques. Meaning if he's looking at the other dog, and then as soon as he looks away from that other dog and he looks back to me, I'm going to either click that or mark it with a verbal yes and let him get a treat for looking away on his own, from looking away and his attention. So I'm showing him that by bringing your attention back to me, this is good stuff. There's always that risk when we're going to bring in correction, physical correction, where we're inflicting discomfort on that dog. We always risk, if the timing isn't perfect, we always risk the dog receiving the wrong message from that and actually interpreting that as confirming this threat from the other dog. So that's kind of I don't want to get too far in the weeds there, but I just want to give you an example of how temperament and behavior kind of intertwine within the field of guide dog, and how we're, why it's important to keep those two issues separate and to have an understanding of those things. Does anybody have any questions before I move on?
Mike, it's Liz Campbell. I do have a question, maybe it's more of a comment, but as a blind person, I really appreciate hearing about the body language aspect of what the trainer sees with dogs, because that's something that we don't often know. I mean, yeah, I can tell if my dog is wagging his tail or if she is like putting her head down to sniff, but there are probably a lot of nuances that I miss. And so I really appreciate hearing about like the description of what, say, a dog that's more assertive might do in terms of body language and so forth. So thank you for that. I thought that was
absolutely there. Mike, and it
can I jump in here for a minute? This is Jim Blackston. You can help clarify here. My guide dog is Madeira. She's from GDB. I think she's more passive in some situations, because there's some dogs that are aggressive. They're assertive. They're little things, you know. They come up and they start barking at her, and she'll just stop in her tracks. She will not let anyone hurt her. She'll just, she'll just hold her own. She won't even move. And in fact, she's been known to want to even retreat. What kind of, would you say that is more passive or is it neutral? Just trying
yeah,
to
it's, yeah, it's probably, I mean, I would just from what you described, I would probably, you know, put her on the south side of neutral, you know, meaning somewhere between neutral and passive. Generally in the guide dog world, I would broaden, you know, what I laid out as assertive, neutral, or passive. I would break that up and break that down even further into five, you know, so we'd have a, you know, five being very strongly assertive, four being between assertive and neutral, and then three being neutral, two being neutral, between neutral and passive, and then one being passive. In the guide dog world, most likely the ones and the fives aren't, those guys are going to be, they're drug sniffing. They're out there doing other jobs. They're doing social, you know, the passives might be out there doing social therapy things in a nursing home or doing, you know, reading corners with autistic children and things like that. The fives are probably out there sniffing for bombs and drugs and the other jobs that some of our dogs go on to do. Within the guide dog world, we're always kind of looking in the middle, and then just on either side of it. How we match up, and this is, so once, you know, it's always an advantage in pairing and doing matches when we're working with a graduate whom we've worked with before. And that's going to be true for any of the schools, of course. Once I've worked with, you know, once the school has worked with you as a graduate of the school, even through just one dog, we kind of get a feel of, you know, who was that, you know, how was that dog temperament wise and personality wise, and how did that match up with you, and how did you and that dog do through your working career together? And then when we're, you know, when that dog's retiring and we're going to look at getting a successor dog, then we have, you know, we have an advantage because we know, you know, well, this guy lined up really well with a dog who was, you know, just on the assertive side of neutral. And that's what we're going to look for. He did really well with that as his first time guide dog handler. So we're going to, let's replicate, let's do that again. And likewise, we may say, you know, same situation, this guy for his first dog had a dog that was a little bit on the assertive side of neutral and struggled a little bit with that dog. So the next time we might look at taking a dog that's a little closer to neutral, something, a dog that's going to generally is going to be a little easier to manage. Tricky part that we get into with that is that we have, so if I have a dog that, let's say I'm going to score him on this scale I'm using with you guys today. Say I have a dog that's a four. The handler is going to find that's the kind of guide dog where I'm walking down the street, he comes across a partial sideway obstruction, he just walks up to it, or she, and just loops me right around it, takes me around it. I don't know what we went by. I don't care. Let's go. The dog just takes the initiative, has the drive, has the initiative to just whip me right around that, and off we go. A dog on the more passive side of neutral, so a dog that's in that on a two, that's the dog that would be more likely to like walk up to that sidewalk obstruction and stop and show it to the handler. And then the handler reaches out, finds the obstruction, and then says, you know, left or right, or directs the dog on how we want to clear that obstacle. Both of those methods of going around the obstacle those are both fine methods of doing it. But as I'm saying that, those of you on the call, there's some of you that would like that dog that would go right around. And there's others of you that would like that dog that would bring you up to it, show it to you, and then ask for direction. So either method is fine. Temperament has some, you know, training, how the dog's going to handle that in training. Also, we'll see that as we're working with that dog in training. We see that dog that just boom, boom, takes you right around it. We're like, okay, this is a drive. That's where the trainers will use the term. This is their dog with a lot of drive, a lot of initiative. He'll take things under his own hat, and he'll do it all on his own. And then there's those dogs that are a little more passive and want a little more reinforcement. They want more support. There are handlers for both those dogs. And that's part of the match game that we play, is there's people that are, will come to us when they retire their first dog, and they'll say, you know what, my first dog, took me around things. I really like that. That's what I want in a second dog. So if we match that person with a dog that requires more support, is a little closer to that passive personality, it's going to be a real shock to the system, so to speak, when that person gets that new dog. And it's like, I don't want you showing me every damn pickup block and sidewalk. Just take me around. But then we have other people that you go the other way, that they may have had that dog that communicated that to them, and they appreciated that. They wanted to know what was in their environment. They wanted to know what they were passing. And so then we partner them up with a dog that is drivier and has that more initiative, and the dog's whipping around. So that they may find discomfort. They might find that uncomfortable and not a good match. So those things, that's part of two, where temperament and how temperament affects behavior, the behavior being the dog taking how the dog, the behavior part is how the dog takes you around that obstacle. Training only takes you so far. The dog still is intrinsically who they are, regardless of all the training in the world. And especially when a dog comes under stress, dogs are going to default to the very basic of their temperament. That when a dog is under stress, they're just like we do. You know, we can fake it when things are easy, but it becomes easier to fake who we really are, or fake how we want to react to something when we're under a lot of stress. Same is true for the dogs. The dog can, through training, I can encourage this more passive dog, you know, just take me up and take me around. I don't need to stop. And I can, through support and through training, I can try and pattern a new work pattern. But it's just that, it's a new work pattern that I'm creating. And as long as things are relatively calm and chill, that'll probably stay. But when the dog comes under stress, they're going to default to who they intrinsically really are. So in those situations, we'll look at, you know, we have to look at that included in how, what type of work environment the dog is, what kind of handler people. Some handlers love supporting their dogs. And by that, I mean, you're talking to their dogs a lot, you know, love using the clicker game or the touch games, or using food reward in the, you know, some handlers love that stuff. They love being very engaged with their dog every step away. Other people want to pick up the handle and say Starbucks and get there. You know, so it how much support somebody is comfortable providing their dog also comes into that. Dogs that are generally on, you know, from neutral on down to more passive are going to require a bit more support. So they're going to need a handler that's more more engaged with them. Whereas those dogs that are on the other side of the line, you can drive a dog nutty. If you take a dog that's very drivey, very kind of independent, even a little aloof when they're in harness, they just, you know, you're trying to reward them for finding a nice down curb, and the dog's like, you know, get off me right now, I'm working, you know. So different personalities play into the work in that way. When we, you know, this is part of doing home interviews with people. And that's part of why schools like to do home interviews when we can, is because the video and, you know, doing a remote interview limits our information and our knowledge about that person. It's particularly when we're working with somebody who's going to be a brand new guide dog handler. That makes it even more challenging, because we really don't know until that person is, you know, in class or in a home training, and we're actually working with the dog. We really don't know for sure how they're going to react and respond and interact with their dog. So that's part of the reason for the home interviews as well, is trying to spend a little bit of time with people just to get a sense of how they're, you know, what they're comfortable with in terms of, and in that home interview process, it's even in the questioning and answering and just letting them tell stories about their own, you know, your O&M history and different life experiences. I can kind of get a feel for who you are as a person. And then that makes my job of, you know, prescribing, so to speak, a dog for you, saying this is the type of dog that this person is going to be most comfortable with. This is going to be the dog that this person works best with.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but you have about 4 minutes left, just to warn you.
Right. Oh, okay. And Stacy, you raised your hand. Did you want to ask a question?
Yeah, I just want to, I apologize. I wasn't here when things got started. I've had to be in three places at once, but I will give personal quick testimony that, and I know all schools do this, but I'm biased where Guiding Eyes is concerned, because that's where my dogs have come from. And I can really say that the more information you give during your home interview to the regional mobility guide dog instructors, because the title has changed, I think the more likely you are to get that perfect match. That's been the case for me. I mean, both of my dogs, you know, Cash could not have been a better match for me. And I really attribute that to being able to give Mike good insight into what kind of life I had, the things I did. And, you know, obviously when you get into class, you also get follow-up interviews with, you know, with the instructors, but Guiding Eyes really does a superb job of making all of the best efforts to give each prospective handler that perfect dog. So kudos to them.
Oh, thank you, Stacy. I'll follow up on that. It's in the field, it's getting the match right. If the school gets the match right, we've done a majority of our work already. That you cannot, there's just no substitute for getting that match right. When you have, and in classes, and to all the schools, you know, when we bring people into class, they do their level best to match the right person to the right dog, the right dog to the right person. There's usually about, you know, anywhere between 50 and 100% more dogs than there are people. So there's a pool of dogs to select from. And, you know, this dog would work with this person, and this dog could work with this person over here. No way he'd work with that person. And so, I mean, there's kind of this hodgepodge of tentative matches when people come into classes, and you know, we always get as close as we can. It's not always, given the pool of dogs we have and given the pool of students we have, it's not always possible to hit the nail right on the head as we'd like to. But this is part of the reason for dog switches. When dog switches happen, sometimes it's just simply that the instructors, you know, they lined up a match. They felt, you know, on paper, this looks like it should work. And when the person got there, and when the dog actually got into the person's hands, we ended up having a reaction there that no one anticipated. And it just, even with all the expertise and all the years of experience, sometimes we swing and we miss. And that's the cause oftentimes for a dog switch, is that we're like, you know, you two are just, you know, great dog, great student. Together, you guys stink. Let's fix this, you know. So you know, sometimes it's not to be, it, you know, we don't want the student feeling, you know, it's nothing you necessarily did wrong. It just wasn't a good fit. We misread how the dog was going to react to this person, or we misread how that person was going to react to the dog, or a little bit of each. But that's oftentimes the causes for those switches. So I believe I'm out of time, you guys. I'm happy to take questions if you guys have time, but I understand, Mike, you guys have time constraints.
Mike, I do have one quick question, and then we'll transition to the business portion of our meeting. But can you address the how the PAC hierarchy, kind of maybe helps perhaps with, and I'm not articulating this very well, but I would think that because dogs are pack animals, that also might have a factor in how well they do as guide dogs. Is that right?
There's actually, that's a great point to raise. There's been the newer knowledge of dog behavior has, and our understanding of dogs has really moved us away from alpha pack theory. A lot of the knowledge that was gained back in the day, and that was kind of, you know, the Caesar Mayon kind of mentality. A lot of that, the knowledge that was gained from that was gained by researching wolves in captivity. And that was extrapolated that into domestic dog training. And what we found is that in domestic dog training, particularly when we're talking about the Labs and the Goldens and these very, very almost human, these dogs are so domesticated. They are so comfortable living in a human world. These, you know, your average Labrador is no more a wolf than I am. They're sleeping on our couches. They're hanging out with, are you kidding me? There's no wolf there. So we're kind of moving away from the, you know, alpha theory, and a lot of that stuff is nowadays, you know, in modern dog training is kind of taking a back seat. Now there can be, you still want, I would assert that you still want to be a fair and firm leadership. It's what we all want, whether we're talking about our bosses, our a professor in a classroom, a parent, anytime, anyone that has authority over us, we want fair and firm. Just be clear with me and be fair about it, and I'm good to go. And our dogs often react the same way. If our leadership is clear in what they want, and for dogs that means consistent, and you're taking the time to teach them and to show them. If they're not getting it, if I feel like it's like, oh my God, I mean, how many times do I have to go through this with you? And you know, you have to own that as the leader. You're like, the lesson, the way I'm trying to teach this to my dog, he's obviously not receiving it. So I have to take, he can't change how he's receiving my lesson. He has no ability, that my dog has no ability to change that on his own. The only thing we can do there is if I'm trying to communicate something, I'm trying to teach my dog something, I have to own that. I have to take that responsibility and say, the method I'm using isn't getting through to him. The behavior is remaining the same or it's getting worse. So I need to change something about how I'm delivering this. So in that situation, in the past, people would often, well, you have to let them know who's alpha. You have to, you know, give them an alpha rollover technique, or you have to do, you know, and that's time where we kind of came in with some of this alpha stuff. And it's like, well, you just need to learn, let them know who's boss. With most domestic dogs, again, particularly with the dogs that we're using within the guide dog world, and I'd even include most of the shepherds in there. I mean, these dogs are so, and my director of training would knock me over the head if she heard me say it, but you know, these dogs are softer. They're not those hard edged dogs where you have to assert your authority over them every moment of every day. It's more about seeing them as you know, seeing them as they can be your subordinate. You are their leader. They are your subordinate, and you're going to just take a leadership role and just that fair, firm, clear, this is what I want. If the method I'm using isn't working, then I've got to take it on myself to clean that up and figure out a better way to communicate to my dog. None of these dogs want to own our houses or pay our mortgages or steal our spouses. It's not this alpha dominance thing. They just want to coexist with us. And if they're not getting it most of the time, it's just because they're just not getting it. It's just that simple.
Well, Mike, I wanted to thank you very much. I think this has been a really interesting discussion, and I just really appreciate you being able to join us this afternoon. Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure. Anytime, you guys. I love visiting with the group.
Thank you so much.
You guys are always so great. You guys always have such good questions. So you guys take good care. Have a good afternoon.
Okay, you do the same. Thank you.
Hey, Liz.
Oh, yes, Stacey.
I just sent you a text message, and I'll go ahead and say this here, since the board is here, because we're kind of running,
running a little behind. Yeah.
I sent you a text and would like to propose to the board that, maybe we have a meeting next week just to kind of go over reports and things that we were going to go here. Maybe we can continue with a roundtable of sorts. I can announce that to everybody that TxAgDo did get the Newsline grant, but in the interest of time, wondering what your thoughts and the thoughts are on the other things.
I would be fine with that, Stacey. I do want to say that that under the business section, besides the secretary and treasurer's reports, that I do have an item to talk about ideas for things that we want to do in the coming year, because the coming year starts right after this convention. Our year basically goes until October 31st. We're kind of on the same time frame, if you will, as how the Newsline grant works. So our year goes until October 31st, and then we kind of pick things up again just right after the convention. So starting tomorrow, basically, will be the beginning of our new year, if that makes sense. So I would love to have some input. I've written down a couple of ideas. One of them was from Kevin about the tails. I thought that was so cute. And so I wrote that down, but I would love other suggestions. So yes, I'd be perfectly fine with that. We have about 8 minutes? How many minutes do we have left?
Let me see. I'm going to have to leave at 3.
Right. We all need to.
Session. About 7.
Before we go ahead and adjourn this meeting, and I'm really grateful to, you know, part in the, and we, with the time that we have left, does anyone have any last comments I'd like to share about behavior and so forth? I really thought Mike's presentation was very interesting. And I personally think it'd be kind of neat to have a more detailed discussion about dog body language, because that's something that I really don't know that much about. Just, I'm sure others might know more than I do, but I never really have thought about it that much. But I thought that was very interesting.
Well, Liz, this is Jim Blackston, real quick, in a minute or two. Yeah, I really got some clarification from him on dog personalities, because my dog Madeira, I'm her cheerleader. She wants me to get us going and to cheer her forward. And when I do, then she really performs very well. And she'll take me up to a barrier and let me see what it is before we go around it. So he really helped to explain. For me, she's probably on the a bit on the passive side of neutral, because she's not going to let any other dog bark and push her around. She'll just hold her ground or even retreat. And perhaps that's something to do with my personality too. But he really clarified it, aggressive being 5, passive being one, the guide dogs are somewhere in the middle.
Right. Right. Yeah. I thought that was a really interesting way of explaining it, because I never thought about it in that way. And I'll never forget when I was in my most recent class to get Barbara, her trainer was not my instructor, but she came up to me one day and she said, you know, as long as you motivate Barbara, she will do whatever you need for her to do. So I thought, wow, okay. So I always try to give her little pep talks, you know, and that seems to really help. But yes, I really, really appreciated what he had to say. Christy and Holly, the other panel folks, or anyone else who was with us today, do y'all have anything that you'd like to add?
If you have the opportunity, this is Holly, if you have the opportunity to talk to your trainer, if your particular trainer trains your dog, you know, you can ask them, hey, do you have any tips or tricks for me?
Right.
That's a perfectly legit question.
Right.
Because you may be like, okay, this is what I've done with four other dogs. Why isn't it working with this knucklehead?
You know? No, I agree. I think that's a really good point, to make sure to have that communication with your trainer, if at all, with the dog's trainer, if at all possible.
And also, if you have puppy raiser access, same thing, because there may be a fear and you're going, why is this dog afraid of this? And then you can ask your puppy raiser and they can say, oh, well, we took him to this and there was a balloon that popped a foot from her and it scared her. Oh, okay. So she thinks there's going to be a balloon there. So.
Right. Well, everybody, I think that we should, in the interest of time, go ahead and adjourn this meeting. I really appreciate everybody being here, and board and anybody else, we'll figure out a time soon to meet and go over those reports and then ideas for the coming year.
Well, we have our email list, and we'll definitely stay communication, keep the communication there. So, you know, it'll work out, and we'll figure that out and get some reports done.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody, thank you very, very
thank
much.
You, Liz.
Thanks, Liz.
All right.
Thank you, Liz. Holly McKnight has left the meeting.
Goodbye, everyone.
System dialogue. System dot. Jim Blackston.